For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
We welcome you to the Friday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We're going to spend some time on today's morning show in part one, highlighting a really exciting event that's going to be coming up on the 2nd of April. It is the Carthage UW Parkside Sustainability Summit. And this is a very special event, kind of a hybrid event in that it's going to be both in person and virtual in terms of how it is presented to the public. And indeed, the general public is warmly encouraged to come and participate in this event, which is free, although donations are encouraged and accepted. And this has been a really exciting collaboration between a number of different students who have put in a lot of hard work to put all of this together. We do have on today's morning show, first of all, Carol Sabar, who is Director of Library and Instructional Technology at Carthage. And joining her will be five Carthage students who are all on the team that has been working really hard behind the scenes to create and craft and coordinate this sustainability summit. So we have joining us Zach Gibson, who is one of the primary coordinators of the conference and part of President Swallow's Sustainability Task Force, of which Carol Sabar is also a member. And Zach, before we go any further, tell us what your majors are at Carthage and what year in school you are.
Yes. Hey, Greg. Thanks for having us. So I'm a senior studying finance and marketing over at Carthage. So I will be graduating here in about 2 months.
Very good. Also with you is Alyssa Rodway, who is also a senior, an environmental science and psychology major. We have a junior, Alexis Menendez, a junior biology environmental science major, and then Grace Condit, who is a sophomore environmental science major with a GIS minor. And we welcome all of you to the morning show. Glad that you're here to join us bright and early.
Thank you, Greg.
Carol, it occurs to me that some years ago, when something was created called Sustainable Racine, that was really close to the onset of when we even started talking about sustainability. And I can remember the first couple interviews I did about Sustainable Racine. I had to spend time just kind of cracking open that term. And it occurs to me now in 2022 that we are now all becoming very well acquainted with that term of sustainability. I wonder if you can sort of appreciate that same arc of development, maybe more than our students who've, in a sense, grown up with this term all around them. But you and I remember a time when nobody was talking about sustainability, and now pretty much we all are.
Yeah, I think when we were younger, we probably would have called it ecology, right? Maybe in the 60s and 70s, we would have talked about ecology. The beauty of talking about sustainability is that it's such a great umbrella term for so many different things. And I think that this group of students especially represents a lot of really different angles of that. So I've always been one on when you think about the reduce, reuse, recycle, right? reduce, I think we can all agree, is the brass ring of that, right? The more you can reduce, the less you have to reuse and recycle. So it's just better on that end. So the consumption end, but there are all kinds of things. Is your interest about invasive species or preservation of nature? I know Alyssa could probably go on about environmental justice and some of those kinds of things. Zach's really interested in sustainability investing because of his business bent and so forth. So different people have different ways. Is it about recycling or is it about reducing the amount of energy that you consume and things like that, your carbon footprint, thinking about global warming and climate change. And so there's so many different angles to thinking about this. And even if people aren't climate change believers, for example, nobody would disagree that you don't want to throw a bunch of stuff in a landfill and that green energy like solar and wind are superior to coal and belching a bunch of stuff into the air, right? So everybody loves clean water, clean air, and so forth. So we really pivoted and made it be a lot about a lot more different things.
So has there been a sustainability summit like this before?
No.
This is the first one. The idea really started just between, we had a little meeting. It was just like three of us, some Parkside students and some Carthage students. And we've all previously been really involved with sustainability in the past. So we said, hey, how can our two schools collaborate to kind of join efforts on this, you know, fight against global warming and climate change? And we thought a conference would be really cool. So it started right there. And then I kind of took the idea to the task force, and Dr. Sabar was really nice and liked it. So she kind of pushed us to keep going. And then eventually the team just got really large with Alyssa, Grace, Lexi, and quite a few other students who haven't even been named. And from there, it's just been kind of a really big group effort amongst the students to get this summit off the ground. So.
Zach, it's interesting that of the students we're talking to today, you're the one who is not an environmental science major. So that's not your major at all. And yet, obviously, this is something that's really important to you. Can you trace your interest or concern about this to anything in particular? What ignited your fire?
Yeah, that's a good question. If you told me, as a freshman going into college that I would have been this passionate about sustainability and climate change, I would have probably laughed at you because I really wasn't going into college. I was a sophomore year. I was a part of a social entrepreneurship club called the NACTUS, and me and my peer Sophie Schulman started a project just to bring a wind turbine to campus. And at that time, I knew about climate change and global warming, but I definitely didn't know as much as I know now, and I wasn't as passionate about it back then. But we just started this project because it was like, hey, we have a ton of wind. Let's utilize this natural resource and get a wind turbine on campus. And then from there, the passion kind of sparked, and I started, reading books and taking a few classes that revolved around climate change, and I just got really passionate about it from there. So.
Fantastic. That's great. The other senior with us, Alyssa Rodway, is one of Carthage's sustainability interns. So Alyssa, first, real quick, what got you initially interested in some of these issues and concerns?
It's funny because even though I am an environmental science major, I had kind of a similar path as Zach. I came in as psychology and Spanish majors in my freshman year, and I was not really involved in the sustainability sphere either. I just had this idea of what I was going to go to college for, but then, I started making friends on campus, and they all were kind of in that realm, in that learning about global warming, learning about climate change, learning about what we could do. And I went to my freshman year advisor in my second semester, and I said, I'm really interested in the environment, but I already have the psychology major that I'm also really interested in. What do I do? Because everyone's telling me that they are unrelated and it doesn't make sense to declare both. And she was like, just take the intro class, see what you think, And then if you don't like it, you can just move on with your life, or you can declare the major. And that's what I did. I ended up loving it. So I really think I owe it to the professors in the environmental science department, as well as the friends I made on campus, because it was kind of a group effort. So that's how I got involved.
Excellent. You got hijacked. Say a quick word about what it means to be a sustainability intern.
Yeah, well, that is a growing and changing definition, I would say, because we are kind of the inaugural almost sustainability interns. It's the first time we've been called that title, at least. And so right now we're just working to support the task force. We're kind of the on the ground people that take their ideas and run with them and really make them happen. So things like this summit we've been working on. And then we also have other initiatives, like I'm really involved with our reuse house that we have just off campus that also started this year. So yeah, we take all these ideas and we really make them happen is what I can say.
Excellent. Alyssa Rodway. Our junior joining us today is Alexis Menendez, who, among other things, is president of CURE. Explain to our listeners what the organization CURE is all about.
Absolutely. So CURE is Carthage United to Rescue Earth. I was the president my sophomore and now my junior year. And we are an organization that really prides ourselves on being passionate about the environment, but also taking action on how we can get a part of our community and make changes and get other people interested in sustainability. So we do a lot of projects on our campus, but our main goal is to kind of spread the word of sustainability throughout our community as well. So we do things like cleanups on the beach. We do Audubon cleanups where we collect trash. We collect plastic bags in order to reuse for all of our different events that we do, picking up garbage. But then we also do some more fun activities where we reuse items such as clothes to make tea, to make bags out of them, reusable bags. So we just try and be a really integral part of our community and spread the word of sustainability. And then that's why we were so excited to be a part of this summit, because it's bringing a bunch of different walks of life, not just environmental science majors, to kind of open their eyes to see why sustainability is so important and educate people on what changes that they can do to better implement environmental sustainability into their lives.
Alexis, can you trace your own personal interest in all of this to anything in particular?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am really, really close to my grandmother. She is just the most beautiful human I've ever met. And she's kind of, you know, the voice of sustainability, the person that you think about. She gardens, she raises chickens, she lives in a rural area. And I've always just looked up to her a lot in my life. And when I was 16, she went vegetarian. And I was like, oh, that would be super cool. I want to try that too. And just from going vegetarian, I kind of went on a deep dive on why that's beneficial for the environment. And it opened a lot of doors as to what things are sustainable and what things am I doing that are not sustainable. And I had no idea. So starting from there, I got really, really interested in lessening my ecological footprint. And I went to a STEM academy, so I always have really, really loved the sciences, and I wanted to be able to implement that into being more sustainable and furthering my education in environmental science. So when I came to Carthage, I had no idea that they offered an environmental science major. I was just going to come and be a bio major, but reading the catalog, I saw that and was like, that would be totally awesome to kind of combine two things that I've always loved. And since then, I joined CURE Club my freshman year, really, really loved it and loved being a part of it. So then I ran for president, and I've been president of two consecutive years. And I've kind of just tried to find every way that I can get involved on campus and kind of share the word of sustainability to students, the community, and then just keep learning myself as well.
Fantastic. Really well said. Finally, sophomore Grace Condit is also an environmental science major. And you are part of student government at Carthage. So it sounds like part of the role that you can play in all of this is to draw in that sector of campus life. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so I'm actually the sustainability senator on student government. I started out as a representative for CURE Club, actually. And then I'm in a position that was also created by Lissa. So it's fun to see how connected we all are. but I kind of take the student body and concerns with sustainability on campus and present that to student government. So sometimes it's kind of hard. It's easy to get disconnected. So my job is to kind of bring it all together and just kind of reiterate how important campus sustainability is. Student government is involved in everything on campus. And so having some sort of sustainable outlook is incredibly important. And so that's kind of what my job is here and how I got connected with planning this summit. So I'm just kind of here to help aid everyone else and do the best that we can to work towards a goal we're all passionate about.
Nicely said. And your own interest in sustainability issues and concerns stems from what?
Yeah, so I've always had a love for the outdoors. I live on a family farm and have worked for a family business all of my life. So I've spent a lot of time outdoors and have had a great passion for it from a young age. I knew coming into college that I wanted to spend my life working outdoors. And so now I'm kind of going into something that'll help work towards conserving what I've always loved from a young age.
Very good. For those of you just joining us, we are beginning today's morning show, the Friday morning show, with a preview of an exciting event coming up on the 2nd of April, a sustainability summit, a collaboration of sorts between Carthage and UW Parkside. And this is a hybrid event that is some of it happening in person, some of it in virtual fashion, a full-day conference, 9 to 3, free, open to the public, with donations encouraged and gratefully accepted. And we have with us Carol Sabar, who is Director of Library and Instructional Technology at Carthage and a member of President Swallow's Sustainability Task Force, as is Zach Gibson, a junior at Carthage. And we have three other students with us as well, Alyssa Rodway, Alexis Menendez, and Grace Condit, who have all been working very hard to make this upcoming Sustainability Summit a reality. Zach is the person who has handled quite a lot of the coordination of this summit. What has this been like compared to what you expected it to be in terms of putting together an event of this scope and magnitude? I assume you have never done this before.
Yeah, no, this is the first time. I think whenever we start these initiatives, we always run into it really quickly without thinking too much about how much work it'll actually be. But it's been an absolute blast planning it. I think these things are always a little bit more work than when you initially start, then they always end up being a little bit more work. But it's definitely taken over my life a little bit. I spend a lot of my days sending emails and coordinating things with either members of the faculty or members of Carthage faculty staff or just speakers in the community. But it's definitely been helpful. We've had so many other great students, hop onto this initiative that we've been able to split up the work quite a bit. But it's definitely been a little bit more work than I initially thought. But it's been a fun process. So
tell us a little bit about putting it together in terms of deciding what kinds of issues within the big umbrella of sustainability to take up at this event. I mean, there's a million different directions you could go, a million different people you could invite. I mean, what was that process like in terms of crafting the specifics for the summit?
Yeah, that's a great question. When we started, we really had this core idea of, in the past, at least from the time I've been at Carthage, Carthage and Parkside haven't really collaborated too much on our efforts towards fighting global warming. So we kind of thought to ourselves, what can we do? And we felt like the best, at least from my experience, when I've gone to different conferences and summits, not even related towards sustainability in the past, it's such a good opportunity for networking and for sharing ideas. And you really never know what can come out of like the random conversation you have with someone at lunch as well. So we felt like it'd be super cool and super beneficial for sustainability within the Kenosha area to bring all these people from, the community and from Carthage and Parkside together for a day full of learning and dialogue, focused around sustainability and renewable energy and all the different facets. So, that kind of brings us to a nice segue into like when we were deciding what this conference would really encompass and who we'd invite to speak and attend. We wanted to launch a wide net, or cast a wide net with inviting everyone from the community and Carthage and Parkside, just to really, try and get as many different perspectives and people engaged as possible. And then with speakers, we really just wanted, one, something that interests everyone with lots of different perspectives there. And two, we just wanted to make sure that people were also learning about forms of sustainability that they're not as familiar with. For instance, I'm really in tune with like the renewable energy side of things, but I don't know as much about green art. So we have a professor giving a talk about green art at the summit, and I'm looking forward to trying to tune into that session a little bit to learn more about that.
Excellent. I want to be sure to hear from each of our students on at least one visitor, speaker, presenter about which you are especially excited. And again, we're talking about a sustainability summit that's going to be coming up on Saturday, April 2nd from 9 until 3 with a wide array of guests who are going to be presenting. Alyssa Rodway, let's begin with you. What's one component of the summit that you want to highlight for our listeners?
Well, I would really love to highlight a specific speaker that I myself recruited. My old supervisor from the city of Racine, Adrian, or AJ Koski. He is kind of the main man for the city of Racine as far as sustainability conservation efforts go. So I worked under him this past summer as a coastal restoration intern, and he is so knowledgeable. He is one of those people that not only talks about the stuff that needs to happen, but actually makes the stuff happen. So he's responsible for the Racine beaches, and he's done a lot of work with those as far as aesthetic improvements and ecological improvements. So he's going to come to the summit and talk more about that local work that he does, and specifically using natural solutions to alleviate environmental problems. So I'm really excited to give him this sort of voice at the summit, because I think he deserves more recognition than he gets.
Great. Absolutely terrific. Alexis Menendez, highlight something for us from the summit that's coming up.
So I'm actually going to highlight two speakers that I'm really excited about. Both are part of the Natural Science Department here at Carthage, those professors being Dana Garrigan and Joy Mast. I think because sustainability and environmental consciousness in and of itself is a really, really big and broad topic that people can often feel overwhelmed when trying to face sustainability and kind of, you know, take a few steps back and be a little bit more hesitant to participate because they don't think that the things that they're doing are going to make any difference. And both of these professors are kind of narrowing down their topics to local regions. So Dana Garrigan does a lot of conservation work with Chewaukee Prairie here in Kenosha. And his presentation is going to touch on protecting prairies and preserving biodiversity in those areas. And then Joy Mast is going to be talking about sustainable management of Western forests. So I think it's really, really important to kind of narrow in and put into perspective sustainability on a smaller scale so that people can actually see those changes being made and how small changes lead to bigger changes. So not only is it really important to kind of delve into conservation from the natural side, but also it is really important for people who are less familiar with sustainability to kind of visualize and actually see how these changes are going to be implemented and how they can be beneficial to our region. And then it kind of, snowballs, because if we can make an impact in our region, then people can make an impact on their region and so on. We're just making this big collective change.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. That's what we all want, I think. Very good. Grace Condon, what would you like to highlight from this upcoming sustainability summit?
Yeah, so kind of going off of that, we've heard a lot of different varieties of backgrounds when it comes to sustainability. And I know that when we got this speaker, it really stuck out to me. We have Rev Barker, which they're going to be talking about how religion and climate change collide. And I just think that is a really interesting aspect. I think it shows, honestly, the diversity of the summit and just the wide variety of speakers that we're going to be having, especially with the green art, which we mentioned before. We're going to be talking about things from policies to restoration to art and religion. I think there's a lot of things that can be learned and a lot of things that you might not necessarily think of when you think about the environment and sustainability. And so just having this speaker kind of talk about something a bit different, I think it just kind of shows that we've got something for everyone.
Very good. Carol Sabar, I should give you a chance to talk about maybe a particular presentation that excites you with the upcoming Sustainability Summit.
Yes, glad to, and glad somebody else didn't take this one, because I'm really super excited by Dr. Lisa Cottrell that Professor Matt Zorn recruited. She's actually going to talk about environmental medicine. So she's worked especially with sleep medicine and talking about some of the ways that the environment, when it's bad, sort of wrecks our health, right? And so ways that I know it talks in here about posture and sleep and things like that, and how changing our environment can actually help improve our health as well. So that's an angle that I don't think any of us thought about. So like we said, there's really something for everyone here. I think everyone could find, you know, if you're really not interested in XYZ, you'd probably be really fascinated by either the green art or the environmental medicine, because those are, you know, really, really fascinating topics.
Terrific. Zach, anything else in terms of specifics for the summit that you want to make sure our listeners know about?
Yeah, I think they did, the rest of the group here did a great job of kind of highlighting some of the speakers. One of the last speakers I'd like to highlight is one that Liam Carls, one of the other students organizing this event, was able to attend or attain, and it is our keynote speaker. She is the Senior Director of Global Sustainability over at SC Johnson, and that's Pam Opsiuda. I hope I said that last name wrong. Sorry, Pam, if you're listening, and I butchered that last name. But that should be a really cool keynote right at the beginning of the summit to kind of highlight, you know, what a large corporation like SC Johnson does in terms of sustainability on a local level, as well as you know, some of those global sustainability standards that they have as well. So
explain, Zach, how people are to access what's going to happen on Saturday, April 2nd. What are kind of the nuts and bolts by which the public can take all of this in?
Yeah, awesome. So there's a virtual attendance option and an in-person attendance option. We do ask that you register for either of those. So if you are interested in coming, we would love to have you. It's a free event and anyone can come. And you just have to go to carthage.edu/sustainability. And so from there, you should be able to find the registration link and sign up. And like I said earlier, it is free. And if you come in person, we'll have a cool swag bag to give to you, as well as a free lunch will be provided. So,
excellent. And how do people do that registering process? I mean, where do they go?
That is at that website that Zach just provided. So www.carthage.edu/sustainability. And once you hit that, it's a really nice, somebody did a really cool graphic for it, and there's a big red button that says register for this event. So you'll click on that red button. And like Zach said, register even if you plan to attend remotely, so that you'll have all the links and things for all of the Zooms that are all the speakers that are available remotely.
Carol, since you and I are the two old fogies here, I have to say it probably does your heart good as it does my heart good to hear from these students doing such a brilliant job to put together such an important event and to speak so passionately and articulately about these events that impact all of us, whether we like it or not. I mean, it gives you hope for the future.
It really does. They've been fantastic. The sustainability interns, shout out to the other folks, Grace that we have, Georgia that we have is currently in Senegal, And then there's Liam and Liam, both of the guys and the interns are named Liam, Liam Carls that Zach mentioned, and then Liam Doyle, and then Becca Cully is our other person. So they are our boots on the ground. They are our arms and legs. They've done a lot of really great stuff. I've been inspired. They come up with their own ideas. They grab the ideas from the task force and run with them. So, and I've actually known Lexi for a couple of years now, and got involved with Zach and Sophie, who's not on the call, but she's a member of the task force. Yes, it's amazing. They have a lot of energy and a lot of really good ideas and a will to see it through, which is great.
And Zach, since you're just a junior, are you already thinking about a sustainability summit for next year?
I think that's the goal. Yeah, we're calling this the inaugural Carthage Parkside Sustainability Summit with the hope that we can kind of make this an annual thing. And I think this being the first one, we still have lots of ideas for this that we didn't get a chance to implement because we were figuring out so many of the other things. So I think what we're going to do after this summit is make a big Google Doc, you know, kind of outlining everything that needs to be, or all the important things that need to happen to put on the summit, as well as a few more ideas to make it better for the following year. So.
Excellent. Well, in the meantime, this is certainly impressive what all of you have managed to accomplish thus far with this inaugural sustainability summit coming up on Saturday, April 2nd, 9 to 3, a hybrid event that you can attend in person or virtually, and you can go to Carthage, www.carthage.edu/sustainability to find out all of the information that you need. I'm grateful to all four of you Carthage students who joined us, Zach Gibson, Alyssa Rodway, Alexis Menendez, and Grace Condit, and Carol Sabar. Great to have you back on the morning show. Thank you for all of your hard work on what promises to be a terrific event, and thanks for being part of the morning show today.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
You're listening to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg, and for part two of today's program, we're going to be talking about a really exciting concert that is going to be coming up this Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock at Living Faith Lutheran Church in Racine. It is a concert by the Bell City Brassworks. And I'm sure a lot of people here in southeastern Wisconsin are well acquainted with this marvelous group and the many terrific performances that they have delivered over the years. Although they have suffered through a lengthy hiatus, as have so many performing arts groups during this COVID-19 pandemic, particularly groups, of course, that involve brass instruments. That has been a risky behavior, if you will. And so a lot of those kind of performances have been very few and far between, and done only under the strictest of circumstances. And now, as we edge our way towards at least something resembling a bit of normalcy, it is great to have Bell City Brassworks able to publicly perform again, and their concert is coming up again this Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. And I'm really glad that their artistic director and conductor, Doug Johnson, can join me over the phone to talk about this terrific group and the concert coming up on Sunday. Doug Johnson, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Thanks, Greg. I'm looking forward to this concert tremendously, and it's great to be talking to you again.
So we should just remind our listeners, or maybe those who aren't directly acquainted with you, that for many years you and your wife taught in the Racine Unified School District, and for many years you were the coordinator of music for the school district, but have now retired to Stoughton, Wisconsin, to be closer to family. But you make a commute back to Racine to keep your hand going with the Bell City Brassworks. Just explain why you feel the urge to get into the car week after week after week and make the trek back to Racine for Bell City Brassworks.
Oh, come on, Greg. It's only an hour and 40 minutes, but one way. But no, it is such a fantastic feeling. I can't tell you how great it was when we started back up in September of last year, 2021. And we started our rehearsals and got ready for a November concert. Just to see everybody, to be able to sit down and perform together again, to play exciting music, to just excite the room and the air with a wonderful sound that this group puts out. It's been a terrific experience. And I miss it. We missed it tremendously from the time COVID hit and the pandemic hit, and got everybody back together, and the band was happy to be there, and everybody got their shots and masked up for rehearsals, and but it went extremely well, and we had a tremendous time with it. And now it's time to seriously get on with our music and perform as much as we can.
I want to be sure that time doesn't get away before we mention a really important theme for Sunday afternoon's concert, that this program is being played, at least in large part, in memory of someone who was a beloved part of the Bell City Brass Works family, Gary King. Explain to our listeners who Gary King was and what he meant to the group.
Well, Gary King is from Racine, and he even went to through Park High School and the University of Wisconsin. And he's the founder and was the president, one of the founders and the president of Bell City Brass Works for many, many, many years until his passing on April 4th in 2020. Right after we canceled due to the COVID break, he suffered a stroke and passed. But he was a fantastic musician, very caring person, and very involved at Living Faith Lutheran Church also. And it was just, it was a shame because when he passed, we had no chance to say goodbye. So this is an opportunity for us to say goodbye.
So towards that end, then, what did you put together for this program? I mean, is it just that his name kind of adorns the concert, or did you choose any of this music with him specifically in mind?
Actually, the music was chosen with him in mind, and it follows quite a bit of his life and his history with the Racine thing. This was put together really by Jim Mertens, a good friend of his all the way through. Racine and Racine Kilties, because they were both extremely involved with that, which is why Brassworks got started. But to go on to it, I mean, we start the concert with Amazing Grace, and then we do a piece called Swingin' Kilt, which when Gary was growing up, he was part of the Kilty Cadets, and it was a piece that they played. And then we kind of follow his life there. We go to On, Wisconsin, do a number written by Ken Norman, arranged by Ken Norman. And then we do the music that the Kilts did in the 60s, late 60s, when they won their national championships. Yes, indeed. There's one piece we're playing in MacArthur Park. Yes, indeed is just a terrific piece by Cy Oliver. And we've had a lot of fun doing it. And we go through other things that he's been involved with. He's getting involved with brass bands and then doing some of the music that we do with churches for services and for Memorial Day, things that we have been known for and really enjoy playing. So, yeah, it's a lot of great, great music.
Wonderful. Doug, I don't remember whether or not you were in Bell City Brass Works right from the start. If you were, then you are really in a position to tell us exactly how this group started and under what circumstances. But if you weren't on hand, what can you tell us about that?
Okay, well, I attended a couple of rehearsals, but I was not part of the original group in the beginning. The original group got together. Many of them were, they were all good friends here in the Racine area, and that included Kenosha and all the way up to Milwaukee. And these young men and women that were involved were all involved in drum corps. And they were looking forward to an opportunity to get together. And Ken Norman and Jim Mertens and Gary King were primary movers and shakers to get this program going.
And about what year? And about what year would that have been?
I knew I would be asked that question.
even roughly.
Yeah, roughly. Well, we've been in business for I think 30 years. And they will hit me later for missing that one. But, yeah, we've been around for quite a few years. And these guys got it together, I think, in the late 70s, early 80s, we got started with this band. So, yeah, probably pushing 40 years. It's been a terrific group, just a terrific group of guys.
One of the things that intrigues me the most is that you stand on the podium and you look over this group, and although it's kind of a wide range of fine musicians from different walks of life. You have always had a really strong representation of music educators. I mean, of people who are band directors themselves. And I should think that's both kind of exciting and maybe a touch intimidating as well, to be the director of a group that's full of band directors.
Yeah, that was my first moment when I stood in front of this group and looked around and saw many band directors, some people that I had worked for or played under at one time or another, and then I was now in charge of this group. And it's really amazing how hard they are all into it, absolutely giving everything they've got. They're excellent players, and we, like you said, we have a wide variety of players, all the way from ages, I think, 19 this year, 19 or 20 this year, to mid-90s. And
wow,
they're fantastic players. These guys come in every week and can't wait to play again. So it's fun.
Fantastic. We've touched briefly on the matter of COVID. Can you just talk a little bit about what that hiatus was like for you? And I'm not even touching on the fact that you yourself contracted COVID at one point and were pretty sick, I think. But yeah. even beyond that unpleasantness, just the difficulty of having to put the brass instruments away, at least as far as any public performances were concerned. What was that hiatus like?
It was shocking, I think is the best way I could put it. March 13th, we were all still playing our instruments in 2020. March 15th, 16th, we put the instruments away and did not play as a group, play for anybody, and it was like you just took away major parts of our lives. Almost all of these musicians were quite a bit similar to me, either teaching all day and then rehearsing 3 to 4 nights a week with different groups and playing every other weekend in a concert somewhere. And we've been doing that. I had been doing that for 43 years when this happened that year. And suddenly, for the first time in 43 years, I had evenings free. And I didn't have any performances to come up, and it was heartrending. It really just, it was very difficult to deal with, and I think that created the euphoria at our first concert and our first rehearsal in September the following year to finally get back on stage, to sit down and play together as a group and create music and create the feelings for everybody in the audience. It was very, very difficult time for all musicians, I think, throughout the world. And now to finally be able to get back together and perform again and do things for people, give them feelings, explore sounds, it's just an absolutely great, great feeling.
I'm glad you touched on the fact that one of the strangest things about this is that almost more than anything else that I can think of in terms of a calamity, this is something that affected essentially the whole globe, or just about the whole globe. And for instance, brass groups and orchestras and opera companies all around the world ground to a standstill. And we all experienced the same thing. And of course, coming out of it, I think we all have a much deeper appreciation for this, what this gives to us and how an important part of our lives this is. Where does Bell City Brass Works go from here? Is this how the season ends?
No, we've got another concert coming up in June out at Union Grove. I think it's June 12th is the date. We're doing a concert there in the afternoon at 2 o'clock. We've done that every year, and that's basically for anybody in the Union Grove area. All of our concerts are free to the public, and we usually ask for a goodwill offering during the performance. We also will be performing, I believe, for Memorial Day at Graceland Cemetery in Racine on Monday. And we used to play for Pancake Day, but we haven't heard anything about that yet as far as performing groups. But if we do, we do. And then we'll take the summer off and get back started again in the fall and and do our normal November concert and Christmas concerts and this concert and going back to it. It's just terrific to be able to be back and performing and entertaining people again.
Wonderful. And by the way, you mentioned in passing, I don't remember if it was in the interview or before we went on the air, that you not only commute back to Racine for Bell City Brassworks rehearsals, but I think for another rehearsal in which you are a player rather than conductor. Did I hear right. that right?
Yeah, you did. We come back on Monday nights, Diane and I, to UW Parkside for the Parkside Community Orchestra rehearsals on Monday nights. Look forward to doing that, too. It's kind of funny because we drive there. It seems to take forever to get there to get to the rehearsal started. The rehearsal starts. We have a great time, turn around, drive home, and it feels like we got home in 5 minutes. So it takes me quite a while to unwind after the rehearsals. But right. we have a great time doing that.
Fantastic. Let's recap what's going on this Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock.
This Sunday afternoon, 2 o'clock, the Bell City Brassworks is playing a memorial concert. Dedicated to Gary King and all of his wonderful works and things that he's done in his life. We're playing music that kind of echoes his life through kilts, through the University of Wisconsin, and through Bell City Brassworks. We're even going to start it with, I think we're going to be starting with bagpipes, and we're going to finish it with Auld Lang Syne, which was the Kilty's closer at the end of the concert. We'll be doing pieces like You'll Never Walk Alone and Bonds of Friendship, MacArthur Park, I'm a Brass Band, and then we're doing some great pieces by William Himes, Amazing Grace, and Nicaea. And William Himes is the conductor of the band in Chicago Staff Band of... the Chicago Staff Band in Chicago. That is a fantastic group that is known internationally. So
fantastic. So Delphi 2 o'clock, Army. And this will be yes. So this will be Living Faith Lutheran Church in Racine, right. Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. The public warmly invited to come, and it's a lovely space. For music making, although I have to say I don't think I've ever heard Bell City Brassworks in that particular sanctuary. I think that's going to be actually a beautiful setting. Have you already played there?
Yes, we've played there. We've played for church services there, and we usually do a concert there every year. Usually at this time of the year in March, we also play a Christmas concert there. Again, you're correct. It's a beautiful space. And the brass works and the acoustics in the room are absolutely excellent, and the audience gets a chance to get up close and personal and listen to us, and I guarantee you a fantastic time.
2 o'clock Sunday afternoon, the Bell City Brass Works and their conductor, Doug Johnson. Doug Johnson, it's great to talk with you, and best wishes to you and all of the talented men and women in Bell City Brass Works.
Thanks, Greg. Looking forward for the concert. We'll see you then.
Over the weekend, we're sharing a couple of interesting interviews in the podcast version of The Morning Show. Tomorrow, in memory of former U.S. Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, you can hear my conversation with Madeleine Albright from back in 2003 when she published her fascinating memoir called Madam Secretary. On Sunday, my conversation with Tim Federle, who has written a series of books on the character of Nate, beginning with Better Nate Than Ever, a young man, 13 years old, ferociously devoted to musical theater. That wonderful first book, a first of a number of books about Nate, has just been transformed into a film, and it's going to be soon debuting on Disney+. Tim Federle wrote and directed the film. But you'll hear my conversation from back in 2013 when we talk about his delightful book, Better Nate Than Ever. Next week in the broadcast morning show Monday, my guest will be the co-authors of a book called Connectable. We recorded this conversation this past week, and it's a very interesting examination of loneliness in the modern world and especially in the modern workplace. On Tuesday, I look forward to speaking with two faculty members from UW Parkside, Joseph Benson and Doug Sinson, to talk about their new book, Bandits, Misfits, and Superheroes, Whiteness, and its borderlands in American comics and graphic novels. Next Wednesday, the last day of Women's History Month, you'll hear my conversation with Robin Gerber, author of Barbie and Ruth, the story of the world's most famous doll and the woman who created her. And also Robert Weintraub talks about his book about the great Alice Marble, one of the finest tennis players in history. That will be a fun way to round out Women's History Month. On Thursday, best-selling novelist Rebecca Searle talking about her latest novel, which is called One Italian Summer. In our conversation, we examine the nature of love and grief when we lose someone whom we dearly love. And on Friday, which will be April Fool's Day, Waldo Mellon, who is really screenwriter Steve Adams, and a delightful, quirky book called What's What and What to Do About It, answers you didn't know you wanted to questions you didn't.